And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Terms and restrictions apply.
Welcome to the Athletic NBA Show, Monday through Friday,
on the Athletic Podcast Network. This is Nerdish She Wrote with your host, Dave Dufour.
With Mo DeKeel.
Are you ready to be entertained?
And Seth Partnow.
Hello and welcome to Nerder She Wrote on the Athletic NBA Show. Happy New Year, everybody. We made it. I mean, we're recording this on New Year's Eve, but you guys are hearing it on New Year's Day. Happy New Year. We made it out of 2020, the year that felt like it was never going to end. We are now in our third NBA season of the year. It's turned into basketball. I've got Mo, I've got Seth, as always. What's up, fellas? Been a couple weeks.
What's up, and happy New Year's, folks! 2021, we made it! Kind of.
Do we call this the apertura or the clausura?
I don't even know what those words meant.
All right, well, listen, we're starting out enthusiastically on this podcast, and with good reason, because we were in our pre-show, we were talking about some of the trends that we're noticing early on in the year. I mean, we're just over a week into the season, so no big takeaways, but team enthusiasm seems to be a big differentiator early on in the year. No fans in most of the arenas, and we are getting these really weird games. And Seth, you and I were talking the other day in the group chat, and you mentioned that you feel like the teams that are able to get themselves up for these games are just a little bit more ready.
I don't know if it's necessarily the teams that are getting themselves up for the games, but because the pace of play and the number of threes that teams are taking nowadays, like, games are inherently very swingy. Mm-hmm. And without any sort of energy in the building, and this is, I think, a big difference between the bubble, which were pretty small gym, but there's a pretty small gyms they were using, and these big cavernous arenas with tarps over the seats and cardboard cutouts and like a DJ. Bringing some juice to the building is tough. And so you get in these big ring, these big runs. And I think without any kind of way to generate that energy, it's a little bit easier for teams to kind of drop the rope. And that's why I think why we're seeing, you know, not enormous amount more, but a sizable amount more kind of wire to wire blowouts.
I also think some of it too is like some coaches that are willing to pull the plug a little earlier, knowing that some of these guys aren't fully ready.
Yeah,
guys aren't fully ready, whole deal. Not, you know, I mean, some of these teams, even with training camp and preseason, even if they were fully together the whole time, haven't had a lot of time together the way you would hope. But you're right, Seth, in the sense of like just the enthusiasm can take you a long way, though. It can push you and get you going. And I think it's a big thing we're seeing with some of these teams.
And it's something that before I kind of worked in the league, something from the outside always seemed a little bit like performative, rah-rah kind of BS kind of stuff. And then you see when you get really close to it, and you guys have both been really close to it, you see how that level of kind of energy and focus and togetherness, that's everyone jumping up and down on the bench and you know, a lot of noise and stuff like that, is so important for competing at this level. And again, now that the teams are fully responsible for bringing that energy themselves, I think, as you said, that there are teams that are going to go pretty far this year just based on having that every night.
Well, I think the young teams have an advantage here. It's sort of like when we talked about going into the bubble and it being an AAU atmosphere, and the guys who just were in that recently seemed to have an advantage there, I thought, early on. And I think right now they do too. The young guys are having a little bit more fun. The Cavs have been one of my favorite teams to watch so far. And that's part of it, man. Those guys are fired up. They're playing so hard. And you can see like their entire bench is connected. It honestly reminds me of the 14, 15, 15, 16 Warriors a little bit, where at every single portion of the game, everyone on the bench seems to be involved with what's happening on the court.
I mean, that goes a long way, you know, just having that from your bench. I mean, listen, when we had fans in the arenas and stuff like that, when you'd go into a hostile environment, you would always just be like, look, it's just us, you know, and the bench was the one that had to bring the energy. And the guys, you know, we see it sometimes. You can see the teams that look unhappy because the bench looks miserable. And then you have the teams that are jumping up and down and super excited. I mean, the Lakers last year were a team. I mean, we've seen it with the Bucks. We've seen it with a lot of teams. When things are going well, everybody's juiced and excited and running around. And they're acting like idiots. Let's not be foolish about it sometimes, but it's fun.
Well, it's fun.
But it's fun, and it's, yeah, and it's enjoying basketball. It. And that enthusiasm carries over to the guys on the court, and it helps to kind of push them. Or, you know, trying to cheer your teammates on when things aren't going well. It really is. This is a season of create your own energy, you know, for each of these teams.
You know, the Lakers are another team that are really good at this. And it starts with LeBron. Like LeBron being involved, I don't know if LeBron gets more excited for his own dunks or for other guys' dunks. And he kind of sets the tone for that team. And I think this is another, it's kind of a hidden advantage that the Lakers have, is that they are good at generating their own enthusiasm. They've got great chemistry. And I think that plays into it too.
That was one thing we noticed about them in the bubble is they aren't just bringing energy to their own team. They seemed like they were the most committed team in the bubble to almost intimidation also. I mean, you've got they have a lot of guys who'll chirp from the bench. And that's, you know, again, without the fans able to bring the hostile atmosphere, maybe that substitutes for some of it.
Well, and that might be a way that they miss Dwight a little bit more, you know, than on the court, to be honest with you.
As long as they got Dudley, they're fine, because that dude doesn't stop talking. Yeah. So.
So we can't talk about chemistry and team enthusiasm without talking about the elephant in the league, and that is the Los Angeles Clippers. And since, you know, about this time last year, we were discussing the fact that we felt they were too cool for school. Scared to try hard. I don't know why, but that's how we felt. And it played out that way. I don't know if it would have played out that way without a hiatus, but that's how it played out. Mo, I'm going to start with you. I think the Clippers look a lot better. Am I crazy? Am I reading the wrong tea leaves?
No, I think you're right on. I mean, here, let's just put it to you this way. Kawhi Leonard takes a nasty elbow from Ibaka, sits the game, has 8 stitches in his mouth, plays, you know, on Wednesday night. In the post-game press conference, makes a joke about it, you know, with his weird face masks, and said Ibaka said he looked like Leatherface, and he said anybody who makes fun of me is on the trading block, you know, and yes, Serge is on the trading. Like, he made a joke. It was Kawhi. He made a joke.
Well, Kawhi is the funniest guy. Yeah,
okay, sure.
Come on. Let's
unintentionally because of his robot's dryness, but my point is, though, you're seeing a lot of that stuff from them. In that sense, you're seeing a lot more enthusiasm. The other thing you're seeing, and this is something they didn't have last year, and this has been a criticism of Kawhi for a while, you're seeing a little bit more leadership from him. You're seeing him more involved and more engaged. One of my biggest criticisms of LeBron's first year with the Lakers, when it was just him and the kids, you know, was he did not look engaged with this team. He didn't look locked in. He didn't. What we're talking about, the way he looked on the bench this past year, was not him the year before. He just looked like
he didn't want to get attached because he was going to trade all those guys.
Whatever. If you're coming in as LeBron, you got to have that, you know, you have that stigma. And I think it's one of those things. And I think that's the same thing that happened with Kawhi last year, was he was very, you know, detached from the team. And this year he looks like he's pulled in more. And it's I think, going to pay off for them in the long run.
Well, Ty Lue, he managed those Cleveland teams really, really well, I thought. And a lot of what I've seen from LeBron the last, you know, year and now this season in L.A., I thought Ty Lue did a really great job of in Cleveland. And maybe that's part of what's happening with the Clippers. You know, maybe Ty Lue is actually like bringing a lot of that enthusiasm to the job instead of, you know, being the older veteran coach that doesn't want to have practice and is just going to kind of let you do what you want. That's a good thing, I think. He's coaching those guys.
I thought was going to jump in.
But no, this is a good thing overall for the Clippers. But I think for the league in general, obviously it's an odd experience, you know, for the viewer at home. But the blowouts are going to be an issue, and so I wonder if there's some way for the league to sort this out. I don't know how to do it. How do you get teams up so you don't have blowouts? And like you said, pulling the plug, that's going to be a thing that just happens a lot this year because you've got a compressed schedule. I keep citing this, but the Jazz are playing 37 games in 71 days.
Yeah.
And I'm sure every other team is very similar. I just know those numbers off the top of my head. It is going to be tough. We're going to see, I think we're going to see another 50-point win in the season. It's probably going to be Atlanta or Brooklyn that hangs it on somebody.
Or gets it hung. Given the defense that either team.
Well, look, all right. I guess it's that time of year. We're in small sample theater, prime time, part of the calendar. So we thought we'd have a little fun and jump in on that. We're raising eyebrows very early. Admittedly, very early. But there's a few teams that I think, you know, the early returns are not great. And I think we got to start with New Orleans.
Yep.
They are not looking like the team we thought they would be. And honestly, man, it starts with Zion to me. Zion's defense.
Interesting.
Zion's defense is still just atrocious. Really? It's not good.
It's interesting you say that because that's one thing I've kind of picked out is he maybe isn't always in the right spots, but his activity level is so much higher than it was.
It is higher, but it's still bad. Yeah. And there are still plays where he like, it's almost an arm wave.
It's not even that.
Yeah. Mo's shaking his head.
It's not even that. I did a video on it earlier in the week, but like there is a play where this DeJounte Murray is driving to the elbow and shooting. Now, Zion is not guarding his man one pass away. He is close enough to affect the shot of Murray and just stands there. Like, that's not activity. That's just chilling. Like, that's just garbage, you know? And that's the stuff that's like, that's the things where do one thing or the other. Don't just stand there. You know, I get it.
What are we saying? 20% of possessions he's even getting into like a stance of some sort?
I mean,
like ready.
Yeah, 20%? I think it's the off ball stuff that's a problem for him. It's his inability of just get into the spot and maybe it's a recognition thing or whatnot. But the way I look at it, it's like we talk about him like, oh, he's young. At a certain point, he has to learn it because he's building these habits now. And if we continue to give him the excuse of he's young, when he's old, we're going to say nobody ever taught him. So I'm not okay with this. You have to start now.
I don't know. If I'm a player in that circumstance, it sounds pretty great.
That's great for the player until he demands a trade because the team's not winning because he doesn't play any defense.
This is really interesting because when I've watched New Orleans, this stuff that I've picked up on that was like especially the off ball, like getting his hands on passes and stuff like that. That's stuff that I've noted that was different. So it might just be, you know, again, early sample size. The games you've caught have been one way and the games I've caught have been another. And that maybe speaks to kind of consistency of effort, which is, you know, as big a problem as you know, as it. Oh, so you can do it. You're just choosing not to tonight. Right.
Defensive results have been mostly fine, right? Like they have a top 10 defense right now, but I think the process is bad. The offense, I don't even know what's happening.
So this is something I was talking about with a guy who covers the Pelicans, Shamadua, and we were their starting lineup doesn't make a lot of sense because they're starting their five best players, but they're five guys who want to play three different ways. Like Lonzo and Zion want to get up and down. Bledsoe kind of wants to, you know, run the pick and roll. Maybe Steven Adams kind of wants to run the pick and roll. And Brandon Ingram wants to ISO. And so they, it's kind of like, which version of the offense are they running with those five guys? And it doesn't, it never seems like it totally makes sense. And then they go to a bench unit that just doesn't have really any sort of enough creation. And so it seems to me that, you know, I've kind of enjoyed them most when they've kind of let Lonzo initiate. Mm-hmm.
But then you're at a disadvantage.
Yeah. Well, it's hard to do because of, you know, contracts and status, but like putting like Josh Hart in the starting lineup and letting Bledsoe really just like, you know, whether it's Adams or Jackson Hayes or whoever, just spread pick and roll the second unit with Redick out there, just seems like it makes more sense than these five guys who don't really vibrate at the same frequency.
Well, and Josh Hart at least theoretically spaces the floor.
Right.
Which helps them quite a bit. And you know, all of this goes back to the Adams-Zion pairing, I think, is a little bit funkier. It's great for rebounding, but it's a little bit funkier to fit the other pieces around them.
I mean, I would expand that into say the entire front court.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Ingram.
I think any two of those three work together.
Right.
But the three of them together is kind of kludgy.
But they can't play. They can't play without Adams, though. That's the thing,
right?
And so,
because right. they'll never stop anybody with Ingram at the floor.
I think their issues, though, too, is they're still figuring each other out. You know, and it's still a whole thing. Like this is,
That's why this is too early
now. But it's also a new coach, right? And it's like figuring out Stan Van Gundy's system and he's figuring out these guys. It's one thing to watch them and broadcast and call the games and things like that. But now that you're seeing them in practice, getting the understanding of who can do what and things like that, like that's where it's becoming interesting for him. And maybe they'll probably be better down the road, but like as everybody else will. But it is interesting early on, like, Just some of it just kind of doesn't make sense. Like I know, you know, Seth's really big on Lonzo. I'm more afraid of his inconsistencies, you know, and things like that. So it's like that's the kind of stuff, you know, I'm curious about with this team.
He's a competent passer, though. I get it. I completely
I understand it.
Competent passer.
It's just I don't trust it. I mean, even in the Christmas Day game,
right.
He was great in the first half. I don't remember a play he made in the second half, except when he reached on Goran Dragic, who went behind the back for a layup. Like that's what I'm talking about a little bit.
Though they do, again, some of the problems they have had defensively have been with Lonzo off the floor, and they haven't been, they're playing bad half court defense. It's that they're giving up so much transition because their offense is so junky in those lineups. And so they're getting the ball kind of run back to, and that was where they, you know, you talk about the Christmas Day game like that, they lost that game because they gave up a bazillion transition points. And that wasn't like, it wasn't that necessarily they weren't like running back hard. It's just that their offense was ending in such bad ways that they were facing unbalanced floors a lot.
And Mo has started a video series that he's going to do every week on Twitter. It's his pinned tweet right now. Go to Mo_NBA. Check that out. He just did a little video on Zion's defense and the issues with it. Speaking of stuff Mo just did, wrote a piece on the next team that we are raising our eyebrows at. And Mo thinks that Toronto needs to trade for James Harden immediately. Mo, I agree with you. Do it.
Yeah, no, it's – I wouldn't have said this, I think, at the start of the season. I think early on I was like, there's no good teams for him, blah, 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 blah. And I believe that. Then I watched how bad the Toronto Raptors offense has been. And it's been terrible in the half court, especially in the half court. Like it's
the worst offense in the league.
It's the worst offense in the league. They have the worst free throw attempts. They're at like 13.3 as of now. I think they play the Knicks tonight, so that's going to go up. Of course, you know tonight they're going to drop like 140 because of all this.
Of course.
But the issues are still there. And this is an issue that was a problem last season. Their half-court offense was a problem. You know, they got a lot in transition last year. This year they're not even getting out in transition as much because they're still trying to figure out, you know, how to make up for the losses defensively of Marc Gasol and Serge Ibaka. And it's not that their defense is bad, but they're just not getting out in transition. And that's why I'm just like, look, this is why they got to make that move and trade for James Harden. I think this is a no-brainer. I mean, the fact is James Harden's going to double their free throw attempts on his own.
You know? Well, and this, by the way, these aren't new problems though. No. Offensively, they struggled in the half court last season. It was probably what undid them in the playoffs. I mean, they've had this issue since Kawhi left, and you made a great point pointing that out in your piece. Pascal Siakam is miscast in the role that they've got him in. I feel pretty comfortable saying that at this point. I don't get the hang up for people who, you know, follow the Toronto Raptors. I think James Harden would fit beautifully there.
Seth, you
like playing next to Kyle Lowry?
No, I think he's great for that team. I think he's actually, first off, they have the experience of bringing in a guy who they don't have to worry about too much in terms of culture. They're just going to do their thing, and he buys in great. If he doesn't, they're just going to keep playing their way. And when he's in the game, they'll go one-on-one, you know, and that's kind of his the MO. And I think with Lowry, he's going to get more shots for Lowry. He's going to get more shots for Van Vliet, open looks, you know, and Van Vliet's struggling right now as well. I think it just kind of opens things up here and allows them to attack. But I just can't say it enough, man. Their offense in the half court sucks.
They are, according to Cleaning Glass, in non-garbage time, and non-garbage time is more important this year than it's ever been. Look at these things. They are 29th. The only team that is worse than them in the half-court offense is the I'm thinking you suggested kind of a framework for the deal, Mo, which was like Siakam and Norm Powell for Harden, and trying to figure out what that team looks like. And their offense gets better, but what do they have around to both, you know, that I think that takes away a fair amount from their defense. And then do they have enough shooting?
Well, I think,
that?
You know, with Lowry and Van Vliet, you have solid shooters in that regard. I think OG Anunoby's a guy that bounces. They also get back PJ Tucker. So that's another guy that can help stretch the floor in my framework of stuff. You know, I am a little bit worried about defense, but what's the point? It doesn't matter right now. If you can't score more than 95 points a game, you know, you're not stopping. You're not holding teams to 90. Not these days.
Well, and you know, this is,
but I was just going to say, but acknowledging that this would be doing their big offseason move next offseason. Now, yes, the free agent class doesn't look great next year now that everyone's signed extensions. But that still opens up trade avenues, and it's still does that make you good enough for the next 2 years
to justify the cost?
Yeah. Now, if the deal is just Siakam and Powell, sure. But now, if you we're starting to talk about multiple first rounders and stuff like that.
My question to you, if you're Toronto, okay, you don't make this trade. Next season, you don't re-sign Kyle Lowry because he's up this year, right? Who are you bringing in next year that's going to make you that much better? Like, there's not a lot. I mean, unless there's always disgruntled stars and things like that. But if you're not going to make the move now to open your window for the next 2 years, I think you have a better chance with James Harden as your number one guy, instead of trying to make Pascal Siakam your number one guy when we have enough evidence that he's not a number one guy. You know, and I think that's kind of the framework of the deal for me. And I get it. You're giving up draft assets because, it's probably going to take at least one first round pick, if not multiple, to get James Harden. But I think you just got to be willing to make those runs. And we know that they're going to do it. They took risk to get Kawhi Leonard. Now, granted, Kawhi's a two-way player and all that stuff. I still look at it this way. You're not going to get another guy who can literally walk out of the strip club and give you 44-17.
You literally did that.
No, and I get what you're saying, but this is the thing that underpins all these Harden discussions is he is going to be, you know, he has 2 years left on his deal. He's going to be 33 at the start of the first season of his next contract. And so how the window with matches up, can you, if you make this deal, can you put enough around him in the next 2 years? Or are you better off just, you know, okay, well, let's flip it over and start again. And I don't like that's a bigger question because that's as much a question of organizational goals as it is like best strategy. But you know, the question is, are they close enough for that to matter?
This gets them closer. Right now, they're not. I don't even know. I mean, they're probably a play-in team right now. With the East is,
maybe their best chance is to lose the play-in and win the lottery. And, put Cade Cunningham on this team, put Jalen Suggs on this team.
But if they want to win, if their goal is, hey, we want to be competitive, we want to win, we want to make a run at it again, this is the only way for me that you can do it. If you don't, that's fine. And it's like you said, it's an organizational thing of goals, and they're going to think super long term. That's fine.
Are they a stealth take candidate?
To me, they are.
Like, are we?
It's
gonna
all
start,
about Lowry. Listen, yeah. If Lowry starts missing games with knee soreness or stuff.
If you're not going to try this year, they might as well move Lowry. Yeah. Get something for him. That's the thing. If you're not going to really make a run at it, get something for him. I mean, I know the Clippers need a point guard.
Well,
I don't know how they get there, but
I apologize. I apologize to Toronto on behalf of Mo.
No, I'm making them better.
You're about to hear about that.
I'm making them better. What do they want? I'm trying to help them. Sorry, guys. Yeah. If that doesn't please you, I don't know what will.
All right.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service that you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
One more team that we're raising our eyebrows at early on, and this is a conference finals favorite to me. Before they didn't re-sign Jeremy Grant, Denver Nuggets have the third worst defense in the league. That's not going to get it done, man. They don't look like a contender right now. Even though Jokic looks like an MVP candidate, that team doesn't look very good.
I mean, those of us who are optimistic about the Nuggets before the season, that's me, were kind of all in on, that's Jamal Murray now from the bubble. And that kind of hasn't been. And, you know, he missed a game with – it was concussion protocol.
He had a bad first game, had two good games, but left the third game with the head thing.
Yeah, with a head. I always love that. Like, I love that from football when I say he missed the game with an ankle. It's like, sure.
He is not Bubble Murray.
Yeah. And they kind of need that. I'm not sure how much of it is missing Jeremy Grant still. I still think that's like over the course of the season, that's going to be a thing that is more a playoff matchup detriment than something that, you know, is going to hurt them in the regular season.
It's not just Grant though. They lost Torrey Craig. Torrey Craig was a big part of their defense. He came off the bench, but
in the regular season, especially
in the regular season, right? He ate up a lot of important defensive minutes for them, and now it's PJ Dozier, go try to beat Torrey Craig for us. Will Barton, guard that guy, and it's not the same. They don't have the personnel now. Also,
Michael Porter Jr.
But the one thing too that I did like about the Nuggets so far that's helped them a little bit with the Jeremy Grant stuff is Will Barton's back, which they didn't have in the bubble, and he's looked pretty good. He's been helpful.
Offensively, it's great,
right? And he's making up for that loss there. I think they're going to get Jermichael Green back any day now, in the way things are setting up, and that was a big acquisition for them in the offseason. But it is worrisome, right? Like, Jokic is playing at a very high MVP level, 18 assists in one game. And, you know, it's almost the opposite of Toronto. What's it matter if you can't stop anybody?
I mean, and it's Jokic to a certain degree. And while he, I will tell you this, he looks in great shape. He is making plays defensively, but he's just not good enough as a defender to be your back line guy. Millsap is doing his best. I think Millsap has actually looked way better than he looked in the bubble. But they just don't have the bodies.
Are we overreacting to let me throw some stats.
We're certainly overreacting.
Yeah, well, opponents are right now shooting 43.4% from three against them.
Yeah.
48.9% from the corners.
Little bit of bad luck.
This is the funny thing about these like early season things. It's like, okay, if opponents were shooting like 41% from three, you'd be like, oh, we're worried about their defense. They're shooting 44, almost 43.5% from three. And it's just like, okay, that's such an obvious outlier that, you know, that'll come back to normal. And so it's almost like I'm more easily able to justify, like, it'll work itself out because it's been so bad. Than if it was just a little bit worse, it would be like, well, that might be where they are and that sucks. So I don't know how to think my way around that, but that's just something that's a trap I find myself in like every year.
The other thing too, I wonder is how much are they suffering from a bubble hangover, you know, Western Conference Finals. It's not that far from, you know, when they played and things like that. And, you know, Murray in particular, who's maybe we agree a little bit slow, but like, I think some of that has to take a role for some of these teams. You know, a few of these teams I look at, I'm like, man, they look like they're still a little tired.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's the little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Terms and restrictions apply.
By the way, honorable mention to the Dallas Mavericks, who I would love to raise eyebrows at, but we kind of told everyone that this is what they were going to look like early on without Porzingis. Like, they really just don't have their team together. So this isn't really surprising. Although Luka's 3-point shooting is certainly
that's scary, man. How long are we going to start? You know, it was a problem last year. I mean, at what point are we going to start panicking?
That's the thing. He's never been like
a great 3-point shooter.
He's never even really been a good 3-point shooter.
Right. He's high volume and he takes tough shots.
Yeah, he's high volume and takes tough shots, but he's never been a guy that he's going to just knock down threes to beat us. He's going to be a guy who's going to take and make tough threes at times, but so.
And he's not going to shoot 9% or whatever he's shooting. Yeah. For the whole season.
That'd be amazing, though. And he kept going.
Yeah. That'd be Westbrookian. Actually, yeah. They'd have to change it.
Well, that would be... Yeah.
All right. So one more topic that we wanted to talk about. We missed out on talking about this last week when it was kind of in the news. But the NBA is considering expansion, which we talked about during the hiatus as a way for them to, you know, not just add two new teams, but also to get some cash coming in. NBA franchises worth a lot of money. Wouldn't be awful to get like $3 billion in cash just pumped right into the league. I feel like that would be something good. But from an on the court perspective, there are just a lot of guys that can play basketball. The league can support two more teams. Am I crazy here, guys?
That's been one of my real big takeaways for, you know, kind of despite the blowouts, or maybe even because of the blowouts, is like these deep bench guys come and it's like, hey, I like that guy. You know, these guys who aren't even in rotations are competent players on most teams now. And there are so few teams giving real minutes to just, you know, non-NBA level players. It's dropped. That even that seems like it's dropped precipitously from even 2 or 3 years ago. There's just like so many of the young guys are really kind of coming into their own and becoming like maybe not even stars, but like that's a guy who can play now. Like the Hawks have been a good start to the season, and yeah, Trey's been great, but it's been as much about like Herder, Hunter, and Reddish mm-hmm. being so much better this year than they were last year. And you know, Hunter Reddish had some moments defensively, but Hunter was not NBA rotation caliber this year, and he's looked pretty good this year. Herder has, you know, there's been games where, you know, as bad as the Hawks second unit was last year, Herder has run their second unit and it's been, you know, it hasn't just held serve. It's like expanded leads because they've been as effective. And that's just a microcosm of stuff we see around the league. I mean, you've talked about the Cavs earlier, like Darius Garland. It's a good player.
He's good.
Yeah.
Who knew?
Shock. I mean, a substantial knee surgery is a two-year injury. Like, I mean, it's that's something it's kind of known, but he was bad enough last year that you were a little bit worried. And now he looks like it. He looks every inch an NBA player.
Look at it in the sense of just the league is just so talented and so loaded with young talent across the board. I mean, we're talking about all these guys. I mean, you look at Miami and you have Tyler Hero still 20 years old and we don't know what he's going to become, but he's got some talent. Obviously, Bam and Duncan Robinson and those guys. But like just across the board, there's just a ton of young talent. So to me, when it's like, okay, can we expand this to, you know, 32 teams? You know, I'm like, yeah, we can. And here's the other thing. Even if we have a little bit of drop off in how good all these teams are, in the long run, it's going to be fine. You know, it's okay. If people will complain and go, oh, it's a watered down league or whatever. That's fine.
The league is not getting less talented.
2 or 3 years from now, we're going to be fine. You know, and look at the draft class we have coming. You know, I mean,
look at the next 3 years.
Well, I barely can look at this one, Dave. The next three years
of draft classes.
Damn it, Dave, you're ruining my points by making a better one. Nuts. Damn it, stop.
Yeah.
But like, just with so much talent, you know, and it seems like more often we're finding, you know, teams are finding talent out of the second round even, you know, and these second round guys are coming in and having an effect their rookie year. So I think there's a lot of, you know, room for the league to grow into 32 teams. And, you know, maybe there's a drop off for 1 or 2 years. I don't even think there would be. But even if there is,
I don't think there will
even
be.
Even if there is, it's not a big deal.
Brooklyn can bring five guys off the bench who would start for half the league. That is an insane amount of depth.
Well, they now, bring they at least can, one they guy won't off play the bench defense. Who can start for them.
That's true.
We can talk about that. Like that's going to be one of the interesting subplots of the season is like how fast Brooklyn realizes that like anything you want to care about, Jared Allen's better than DeAndre Jordan.
Oh, it's already happening, by the way.
Yeah.
I mean, he
closed the other day. But just like one thing we should flag about Jared Allen, by the way, is he's a guy whose skill level is perhaps underrated. Like he doesn't have shooting range, but you compare like them just running pick and roll versus him and DJ. You can throw the ball to Jared Allen on the short roll. He'll catch the ball. He'll make passes. And then like defensively, it's night and day. Like
yeah, they had, well, and DeAndre Jordan really isn't even catching passes right now. So,
yeah.
All right. I mean, let's go back to expansion. So, if they expand, right, like Seattle's a no-brainer, there are probably five other cities that make a ton of sense.
Second team in Chicago?
I mean,
well, you have Milwaukee.
Why not?
Come on, man. First team in Chicago, maybe.
You know, but Louisville has an arena, Kansas City. So, this all could come together incredibly fast. It was baked into the last CBA. Like the mechanism is already there. I would not be surprised if going into the summer, we start hearing a lot about expansion because I think that the league knows that they've got the room to do it and that they would benefit.
Right, well, where do you guys want the second team to go? We know Seattle's a no-brainer. Where would you pick? Don't shrug, Dave. Don't shrug at the end of the year.
I mean, I like Louisville just because you could have like a little ABA throwback. Maybe you have the Kentucky Colonels. I don't know.
Colonels.
I don't know the backstory of that. So if it's problematic, please don't blame me for that. But I think that there's a lot, like there are a lot of places that you could do it. Kansas City is a good option. Just don't put it somewhere, and no offense, because everyone knows I love Virginia, but Virginia Beach is not a place for a professional sports team.
Way to, be like Seth in our draft last episode by selecting more than, more than one. Seth, can you pick one? Can you pick one team, one city you want one in? One?
I mean, I think that the NHL has shown that you can do Vegas. So that's, I mean, the obvious one that's out there is you go Seattle, Vegas, and move.
But
Memphis
the TV
to the
deal,
East.
I don't the TV deal in Vegas, I think is.
I don't
great.
Think you get Vegas because here's the thing, and we all saw it because we've been to Summer League more than enough. Las Vegas is a Laker town, plain and simple. Even if they get a new team, more than any for NHL, I don't know who they cared for before that, you know. But we know.
What's hockey, I think, is what they care
about. I mean, they were just happy to have a pro team, you know, and then the NFL came, and I'm sure that who even knows how they'll deal with the Golden Knights afterwards. But the city I really want, and this is more just me personally, but I want Vancouver. Let's just make a little actual Northwest division, you know, and let's go back to Seattle.
Close to Seattle.
Screw it. Let's go back to Seattle. Let's go back to Vancouver. Let's go through the whole – the whole thing with Portland, put Minnesota in that division, move Memphis and New Orleans east. We're done. I just want to be able to go so I can get some good food in Vancouver.
You don't have to move two teams. You only have to move one team. So it'll probably be Memphis.
No, if you add two teams to the west, you'd have to move.
Then you need to move to one to the east.
Just one?
Yeah.
Just one.
No, hold on. No.
Because there's 15 and 15, then there'd be 17 and 15, and you move one, and there's 16 and 16.
Okay, touche.
Yeah.
Yep.
I have my abacus here. You can see me slide the beat up. I'll say that the Vancouver idea, if anyone who's like, you know, lived in around the Pacific Northwest, the MLS little mini rivalry between Portland, Vancouver, and Seattle is great. Those are like, there is genuine
hate.
Like sympathy, hate, yes, between the fans there. That is something you don't always get a ton of in NBA, and that might add a little bit of spice to something. So I don't hate that idea.
No, we can solve the naming issue. Send the Grizzlies name back to Vancouver. Memphis takes the hustle from their G League team, and then they just make up another name for the G League team.
Yeah, problem no, solved. I mean, we got there. We've solved it. Here you go, Adam. Yep. You're welcome. Seattle,
someone
Vancouver.
Give me $2 billion. I'll buy a team. A
couple
Vancouver.
Of guys, you know, pony up the money. We're good. Good talk, guys.
All right, Mo. As we wrap, what are you looking at this next week?
I'm looking at a couple of things, but one thing I'm really paying attention to is just rotations and how teams are doing it. And listen, I think it's going to be a fluid thing all year. I think some teams are still in the early experimental stage of how they want to play, who they want to start, who they want to bring off the bench. I think, you know, the Lakers did it in their Portland game and were playing Montrezl Harrell down the stretch and then realized they couldn't and then went to somebody else. So I think this is going to be a thing we're going to see across all teams, how they deal with their rotations.
Yeah. Seth?
I'm continuing to look at Kevin Durant. His first couple games, it was sort of like the scoring was great, the shooting was off the charts, the everything else was I don't know. And then the other night against Atlanta, it's just like, okay, that's what tier one Kevin Durant looks like. Now you leaven that by saying that Atlanta didn't play the lick of defense at all. So like a lot of people looked good in that game offensively, but still I'm just like, you know, the difference between Kevin Durant as the one of the 2, 3, 5th best players in the league and Kevin Durant, you know, the 10th or 12th best player in the league is, especially with Dinwiddie gone for the year, that's the difference between them being a real contender and not. So really being nitpicky about that is what I'm going to continue to be watching for.
Yeah. For me, I'm watching Jaylen Brown. Offensive leap. This is, by my count, the second offensive leap he's taken in the last year. Because he took one last season, and it kind of went unnoticed because Jason Tatum was just insane, especially in that month of January. Jaylen Brown has become a complete offensive player. He solved his handle issues. And he doesn't get fancy with it, which is totally fine, by the way. A lot of rudimentary ball handlers, and he's beyond rudimentary. But there have been a lot of successful guys who didn't have a lot of flash to their handle. And Jalen doesn't have a lot of flash, but he certainly has a lot of sizzle. That guy is really good. His jumper looks insane. He's hitting the mid-ranger, which is a superstar shot. And I'm wondering if Jaylen Brown isn't the next guy that we say, oh, okay, that guy is maybe a tier two guy knocking on the door of something else.
So remember earlier when you talked about something being like so outliery that you just know it's like Jaylen Brown is shooting 71% kind of 10 to 16 feet and 68.8% from 16.
Totally sustainable.
It's going to do it all year, Seth. Going to do it all year.
It's also a good process. So, we're starting the year on a positive note.
Again, so let me add to that. He is shooting 67.7% from the foul line. So
something, it's got to give somewhere. You got to pay the devil somewhere.
Obviously, he needs to be moving around more on his foul shots. Is what this is like.
He needs to treat him like a catch and shoot.
You know, not disagreeing with anything Dave says, but this is a little bit of a, you know, as captain pump the brakes, guys. I'm saying.
And I'm considered the grouch on this podcast, huh?
How did that happen? That's the more amazing thing.
I have no idea how it got turned, but somehow I'm the grouch on the podcast, and Seth is Mr. Happy Go Lucky. But as for Jason, as for Jaylen Brown, I honestly think he should just shoot the free throws right off the catch when the referees pass him the ball.
Absolutely. 100%. You know, Klay Thompson used to do that. I've done that with players that struggled at the free throw line. I don't think it's mental for him. I really think it's mechanical. But either way, I'm watching Jaylen Brown. Playmaker Jaylen Brown.
Oh, easy there. Now you're going
fun to watch. That's going to do it for this week. We'll be back next week with another show. Go to theathletic.com/NBA show. Sign up. Tell Seth that you love his work. Hop on the app, send us some comments about the show, and go check out Mo's article over at Bleacher Report on Toronto needing to trade for James Harden. Till next week, for Seth, for Mo, I'm Dave. Take care.
Happy New Year!
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10. Place your first bet on any game and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.